So at this time, we have public comments. And we yesterday had covered the executive officer report. But certainly today, with a public comment, anyone who wanted to speak on item 18, which is the EO report, certainly is welcome to do it as part of public comment. So I have speaker cards for that. So you're certainly very welcome to take a card. And so I will start now with Herman Garcia. And you requested 3 minutes.
Oh. Good morning, board. My name is Herman Garcia. I'm the founding president of Coastal Habitat Education Environmental Restoration, CHEER. And our area of focus is the entire Pajaro River watershed and the Monterey Bay area. We cover Santa Clara, San Benito, Monterey, and Santa Cruz counties in the work that we do. We're very comprehensive. I think we're the only organization that is as comprehensive as we are. We do habitat reclamation, habitat restoration, fisheries rescue and restoration. We have intervention programs and strategies, prevention, huge in education, even suppression. We will cite people and arrest people. This morning, I want to wake you up before you start your agenda to a little article in our newsletter. And I brought copies, so if you guys are interested, but I'm going to read from it to you. And before I read this, I want to say that we're partnered at the hip with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Fish and Wildlife. They guide and supervise all our activities in the watershed. And NOAA speaks very highly of this board. So I wanted to let you know that before I read you this. Chemical dump, Yuvas Creek, 2017. 4 years ago, this discharge was reported to the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, and the chemical dump continues. Agencies have failed our watershed, and taxpayers must take a second look at any proposed tax increases and question whether the benefits of those revenues will ever improve our quality of life. Never assume that paying taxes is going to provide the necessary benefits to local, regional, state, and national needs. We must demand accountability, pay your taxes, and follow the money. The negligent, irresponsible behavior must end now. Here's the problem. This is systemic everywhere, not just with this board, but in every agency. I'm 70 years old, and I don't dye my hair, thank you, but
I don't either.
I've been doing this.
I want to know what your secret is.
I've been in the creek water my whole life. I started doing this work when I was 10 years old, doing fish rescue and restoration of steelhead trout. Because CHEER is in every cubic foot of water and every square foot of land in the watershed, nothing gets away with us. Perpetrators, agencies that aren't doing their job, and I can tell you what happens. Because a lot of my friends are elected officials or board members on several agency boards. Staff, they provide the good news to the board, the decision makers, and the policy makers.
And you'll need to wrap up your comment
okay.
Because your 3 minutes
But
are
they
over.
Don't give you the bad news, okay? This issue, the guy's still dumping chemicals, OK? okay, 4 years, and you've had your people out there. I've had NOAA, Fish and Wildlife. Nothing has happened.
Sir, you know, you have 3 minutes over. What I suggest you do is send an email to our executive officer, Mr. Robertson, and then we will follow up on this specific matter that you have brought up to us.
And like I say, I'm going to leave some here for those of you that
also,
are in.
Yeah. Also, you know, any PowerPoint presentation and handouts have to be provided by the Monday at noon, the week of a meeting. So in fairness for everyone else who I have declined last-minute submittal, you know, we will hold those off. But like I said, I suggest that you contact Mr. Robertson by email. You can also do this through our clerk of the board, Ms. Olson, who's right here. Okay. And then, you know, we will follow up.
Yeah, so we've already talked. We're going to schedule some.
Very good.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
you for your time.
You're welcome. And have a great upcoming holiday season. The next public comment is for Nancy Isaacson. I apologize.
Thank you. I'm here to address the item 18, your executive officer's report, specifically with regards to the Salinas Basin Agricultural Stewardship Group. And representing some landowners and growers in the Salinas Valley who have joined the group and but are wondering as to, is this really the best way and how the money is being used? And looking at, to provide, the intent of the organization is to provide water to small water systems that are contaminated, and is it really working the way it is? And then just wanted to point out and share with you some, what we believe are some discrepancies or some inconsistencies, things that should be looked at. Recognizing we may not have all the information. We've tried to get the information, have not gotten it all, but you know, we're in the process of working with individuals. I actually work with a client who does provide water to a small water system. They have provided bottled water for 3 to 4 years. Looked at the cost of, my understanding, and the cost of the stewardship group is about $60,000 a month. And to date, they've provided replacement water, 6,570 gallons. That comes out to almost $55 a gallon. And having had some experience with providing water, we've done it for $1 a gallon. And so have some questions about the cost, how the costs are distributed, how they're being used. And then looking at the application, and for growers, a small grower, 1 to 250 acres, is required to pay $5,000 assessment a year. A landowner with 1 to 1,000 acres is required to pay $13,750 a year. 1 acre, you know, I work with a landowner. She's retired, she's 80 some years old. She rents her farm, she has 40 acres, for $750 a year, an acre. This would require her to pay a third of her rental income that she relies on. Somehow, and then looking at what's been achieved, it's not meeting the goals. It doesn't appear it's meeting the goals and the intent of what was to be done. So we're asking you at some level of oversight to take a look and consider these things and to consider, are these costs being borne and shared appropriately? Are they being expended appropriately? And we ask for you, your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. The next speaker request is for Pamela Silkwood, and 5 minutes have been pre-agreed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, members of the board. My name is Pam Silkwood, and I represent various landowners in Salinas Valley, and I am here to speak about the executive officer's report specific to the Salinas Basin Ag Stewardship Group. I did prepare a letter. It was submitted late, but I do ask that they be distributed as general correspondence. My clients felt that this issue was so important that they sent me here to distribute this letter and submit verbal comments to you with the hopes that this board would take some action. The issues raised in my letter are substantive and troubling, and they're associated with due process, coercion, discriminatory treatment, and waste. Specific to due process, the Stewardship Group LLC was born from an agreement between large landowners and the state board, and they negotiated behind closed doors without public deliberation. And that ended up binding the entire Salinas Valley agriculture. What happened was that after the settlement agreement was reached, the state board began to issue investigative orders to almost all of Salinas Valley ag landowners with more than 40 acres of land. And the investigative order, as drafted, would the timeline and the requirements were so onerous that it was impossible to be complied with. And there was a threat of $1,000 per day per violation for non-compliance. But here's the coercion part. The growers, in order to join, can join this Stewardship Group LLC by paying money to the LLC in exchange for a standstill in enforcement of the investigative order. So the choice by the grower was to face an investigative order that had an impossible deadline and with a potential fine of $1,000 per day per violation for noncompliance, or a set fee paid to an LLC. And obviously, they chose to pay to the LLC. But there's no government oversight over the funding spend. My understanding is that the administrative cost for the LLC's lawyers and lobbyists far exceeds the cost of the water being provided, and Ms. Isaacson touched on that. Moreover, the fee to join the LLC is disproportionate to and favors the large landowners and causes significant hardship to small landowners. Again, Ms. Isaacson touched upon on the numbers, but a landowner with 50,000 acres is paying just twice as much as a landowner with 1 acre of land. Small farmers are disappearing for these reasons. They are being regulated to death. And is this really what we want? We're here to beg you to look into these issues set forth in the letter, because this is really government at its worst. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment.
When it's appropriate, Mr. Chair, I would just would like to hear from staff on what they know about what, you know, specifically Ms. Isaacson has raised. I'm just curious what staff has to say about this, what staff knows, and what kind of oversight we have in terms of doing anything about this.
Is this all the comments on the executive officer's report? Maybe we should
That is correct. Thank you for asking that question.
So at the regional board level, we're not privy to budgeting and how the stewardship group is spending its money. Ms. Silkwood noted that it's an LLC and not a nonprofit. As such, it's not as required to be as transparent as a nonprofit might be required to be. I was not involved, nor was this region involved, in the early process of negotiations associated with the agreement between the state, that is the Office of Enforcement, ultimately Region 3, and the stewardship group. That's the Office of Enforcement initiated the dialogue with, I believe it was 19 large landowners in the Salinas Valley. I might be wrong about the specific number. And that negotiation proceeded for a year before I was brought into the discussion on that. So we're gonna facilitate a dialogue with the Office of Enforcement and Ms. Silkwood, but we don't hold sort of the knowledge or history of the negotiated process that took place that got to the agreement, and then the expectation that there would be no transparency, which is essentially what exists. There's no transparency from the state into how the LLC is doing its budgeting and expenditures and allocating of costs to the membership.
Jessica?
Yeah, John said most of it. There's a couple of issues, and one is that on the enforcement side, we know very little. And the Office of Enforcement has been issuing the investigative orders, and they're the ones that have controlled that process that we have essentially no control over at this point. So to that side of it, they need to talk to OE. The agreement has been signed, and we are already halfway through the first year, so that kind of cart has already left the barn. So we can do, you know, we can help her discuss with OE what her issues are with the investigative orders and the agreement, and try and help that process, but we have very little that we can do at this point.
And if I could supplement a little bit, I would request from Ms. Silkwood to list who this letter that you have is being sent to.
Well, the letter was sent to your board, but I didn't submit copies to Senator Monning, because I know he is working closely with his bill. Felicia Marquez, Eileen Sobeck, John Robinson, Michael Thomas, and Chris Kerrigan, Angela Schroeder, Hector Hernandez, and the Salinas Valley Ag Stewardship Group.
Thank you for that clarification.
You know, my comment is just that, you know, having heard this, and this is, you know, one side of maybe a multi-sided situation, is something doesn't sound fair and equal. I don't know what the recourse is for them. I don't know what we can do about it, but I would hope that whatever staff can do to facilitate at least getting information to these people, I think would be, in my view, helpful.
I want to agree with your statement that there seems some unfairness here. At the time that I got engaged with the agreement, this is mid-February of this year, I raised the issue of transparency into the, I think what we call a third-party agreement. That would be the agreement that the stewardship group makes with any potential member or member. And I raised this issue of, should we have some level of visibility into that? And it was suggested to me that's a third-party agreement and that would be inappropriate. So at that point in time, I realized this train is leaving the station. That is, this agreement is pretty far down the road. It's already been negotiated for about a year. And there was a sense of urgency in wrapping this thing up. And so I selected the areas that I thought were most significant to engage on in the agreement. and that was not one of them. The transparency issue, I didn't follow through farther with. You know, I accepted the counsel that I got on that from Office of Enforcement.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that troubles me is the possibility that there is a disproportionate cost burden onto smaller farms than larger ones. You know, if that's true, that's not a good result or outcome. I don't know how it should be allocated, but I'm just saying that, you know, doesn't sound right to me. And I don't know what's in the LLC agreement. I mean, you know, the members could have voting rights that are also disproportionate, you know, to how much land they own or control. I mean, who knows what's involved in that?
Right. Essentially, you could have A shares and B shares in that. Yeah.
I think, if I may, supplement Mr. Young's comment is that I personally view these stewardship as an incubator to future stewardship / coalition / water replacement program. You know, may it be developed statewide through legislation or other means. So this being a sort of a pilot test in a small scale that could represent a broader program in other regions, it is certainly concerning if this pilot project is really not taking off quite well. Because we have two issues here. One, we had discussion yesterday about the milestones that have to be achieved in order to renew the agreement to year two. And so far, we're not there. So there's that one issue. And then the other issue is just brought forth by our two speakers here, is the issue of equity and transparency in the process. But you know, I think the frustration, and I use that word carefully, is that often you've been chair before with Office of Enforcement, it's sort of a black hole there. We don't know what they're doing. Even our assigned attorney is not privy to those conversations. So the difficulty, particularly for the public, is they look at us and they're like, well, aren't you one agency? I mean, you're the California Water Board, and it's very difficult to be able to articulate, well, no, that's another group, and you know, we have to have arm's length relations. So that's a problem when something is being negotiated within a region and we really don't have a voice about it.
I also want to add that Ms. Silkwood's questions in her letters are significant beyond just the stewardship group. There are a number of coalitions or cooperatives that exist, ag-centric, that exist that farmers pay into, landowners pay into, that we or they, more importantly, they don't have clear transparency into how their funds are being expended. Taking this example and spinning it forward into how it would alter how we staff would behave, I think this would inform requirements that we would recommend to this board with respect to coalitions that would form in this region, transparency expectation, financial transparency expectations, such that members of a monitoring coalition or any other type of coalition have a better grasp for how their money is being spent by that coalition. So I'm trying to grasp for a lesson learned so that we don't have to do this Q&A again. That makes sense.
But I suggest, though, you know, in trying to come up with a next step on this process, is that as the executive officer of a regional board here, that you reach out to the Office of Enforcement and basically, you know, request that, you know, this matter be addressed. But I think as it be being addressed, it's really to solve it, it's gonna have to be addressed with a higher level of transparency. Because if it's, again, a closed door, you know, big black hole situation, we're gonna be right back to square one.
Right, with respect to when it pertains to enforcement. I guess the angle I was taking is we have a measure of control between staff and what we recommend in the board and what you decide. We have a measure of control through our orders of transparency and coalitions that come through that venue. You're right, with respect to enforcement-based things, what I will do is I will facilitate the conversation between Ms. Silkwood and her clients and the Office of Enforcement on this specific issue, and then also push for that sort of similar change in expectation of transparency going forward too.
And I, you know, as chair, if you have a conference call with Mr. Kerrigan, you know, will gladly make myself available to participate.
Got it.
And Mr. Johnston?
Yeah, I would just, and I know you're reporting on a at each meeting on the progress of this stewardship agreement, so I'm sure we'll hear on this next time. I would suggest, Mr. Robertson, that it sounded like Ms. Isaacson perhaps represented different clients than Ms. Silkwood, and so you may want to take a look at whether it's appropriate to wrap her and her clients in as well.
Right. Noted.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Chair, go ahead.
I just have a quick question, and this is obviously broader, but as this gets carried forward and looking at this as sort of a beta test for anything that's developed statewide, is there any sort of discussion as to how to communicate whatever statewide potential effort goes forward to incorporate those types of measures, transparency?
Such as non-enforcement based, like
correct.
Perhaps Eastern San Joaquin or?
Legislation. Legislation
right.
Is, yeah.
Yeah, yes.
So my.
Go ahead. Mr. Delgado.
Yeah, Nancy brought up something slightly different that hasn't been discussed just now, and that's cost as far as gallon per gallon cost. And I would guess that what Perry is doing, sometimes it's very easy to find a particular user and make that connection happen at a lower cost per gallon, and other times there's a heck of a lot more effort, so that in those more effort, higher labor costs are going to be per gallon. The 6,500 gallons or something like that that was reported, is that per month or is that total up until now?
Total.
So it would be nice in the future when we have another review or summary like we did yesterday, if we find out kind of where those costs are coming from, because it's not as easy as just being the Culligan contract, but I'm sure there are cases where it's almost that easy. And then I don't think that Nancy Isaacson was referring to anything other than what members are paying the LLC, but we saw in the executive officer's report that the Central Water Board established a $25,000 contract with Environmental Justice CW. So, you know, that would increase the per gallon cost even more if you were to divide that in. So it'd be nice if we had some summary in the near future about how the cost is being used, and sort of, I don't want to say justifying, but that's what's coming to my mind, justifying, you know, why it may seem a high per gallon cost, but there are a lot of costs, and the benefit of this is worth probably millions if you think about the number of people that may be being protected from drinking water that's exceeding our standards and what that can do to them. So I think that's what we should keep, you know, the eye on the prize is preventing that, you know, the worst case scenario is worth far more than this. Not to say that we don't need to fix inequities and fix unnecessary expenses. That's my input. Thank you.
Good. You know, you may want to refer to some of the limitations that we have associated with the agreement.
So I want to clarify, maybe this will help. It would be great if we could get some kind of breakdown of costs to explain why the cost per gallon is high. However, that's part of the discussion of transparency, that we don't have that authority to require them to give that to us, and that's not something that under the agreement they have to provide to us or necessarily to their members. And that's one of the reasons why we've discussed in the future changing any requirements to require that sort of breakdown.
Right. I wouldn't expect us to force something that wasn't legally forcible, but I would guess that there are some numbers that Perry could give us. For example, it cost us X thousand dollars just to get to, you know, whatever. He told us yesterday about the lock gates and all of that. That all has time and money behind it. So there was probably some ways that the LLC could give us some idea about how that money is being spent without disclosing more than they want to. And the other thing I wanted to ask that I forgot a couple minutes ago is it true that the draft East San Joaquin order is going the other direction as far as going more non-transparent and taking us away from our staff, if we were to adopt it, and their staff at our private region, that the staff would be less knowledgeable about what's going on, not more knowledgeable?
So that's getting into a different issue. But the draft Eastern San Joaquin currently requires that all boards create a coalition order for any coalition that wants to form in the region. And that coalition order would allow for anonymized reporting to the regional board and to the public.
Okay. Thank you.
Monica, and then you, if that's okay. Dr. Hunter.
Thank you. I think yesterday's discussion, we got into some of these issues, so I appreciate Ms. Isaacson and Ms. Silkwood this morning hearing from you. My question is kind of directed at you, but I don't think we want to have you come back to the podium necessarily, but I'm curious, you know, when I contract for a service and I'm working with and especially considering that this is an industry group, how much communication do the landowners have? How much ability do they have to require some kind of accountability from the third-party service provider? And so I'm hoping that the landowners are taking other steps to engage directly with the service providers to start to organize some of these concerns as regards to a second year, because the second year isn't in place yet, and that, you know, in exchange for participation, that they should expect to be informed with some detail about how the funds are being expended. What are the administrative costs? And I agree with Mr. Delgado's comments and observation that there's no straightforward linear kind of, you know, one household may cost a certain amount, another household more remote, more difficulty, et cetera. There are all these different factors that come into it. I think the Culligan solution is an interesting one. I don't know how permanent that is if you think about it in the long run. So I think, you know, the long-term question is definitely a part of that. But I would hope that the internal, within the community and the industry itself, that these are questions that are being directed in some way communicated that, you know, future agreements. Fortunately, this is just 1 year, and as Jean-Pierre Wolf Chair Wolf noted, this is a pilot, and so we're eager to hear about questions and issues that don't meet the expectation. We're looking at a single issue. The priority is to get replacement water to people that are drinking contaminated, unsafe water. How we get there, we have options. I think the urgency in moving forward in this year has put together something that isn't exactly perfect, and I agree with everything that I've heard today. So, but I would like to hear further. We will be reviewing this and getting updates on this program in the next 6 months and year, and I hope that I hear back from both of you, that we as a board hear back from both of you and continue to support the discussion of what this program, how this program can best be structured.
So I'd like to look at this from a little different optic right now, and that is we have an enforcement item. The Office of Enforcement gets involved, and they really kind of direct everything. And there's a proposed settlement. What leverage do we have in the end in terms of how that settlement is going to unfold? And ultimately, are we involved in approving everything?
So this particular settlement was different from the typical enforcement settlement. Typically, enforcement settlements do come before either the executive officer or the board. Mm-hmm. At that point, the board can accept it or reject it. And if they reject it, they can kind of give direction, but you can't order a new settlement, per se. In this case, it was actually originally going to be a settlement purely between the state board and the landowners. And it was brought up kind of at the last minute that, hey, the regional board really should sign off on this. So we looked at it at the very last minute and were told basically that our ability to change it was fairly limited. And we tried to recommend changes that we thought were very important for us to get kind of the most that we could get from them without everyone walking away from the table. And so at the end of it, John Robertson signed it on behalf as the EO. So this was a different action than is typical of our enforcement actions. You know, it wasn't an ACL or a CDO or the typical enforcement action that you see.
God. So we're a signatory to it. Is the state board a signatory to it?
Correct.
And is the stewardship council, are they a signatory to it? The
right.
LLC
yeah. Right.
is? And who else?
That's it. There's three parties in the area.
And so the yeah. stewardship LLC is representing, at that time, unnamed members.
Right, they represent
the
landowners.
They created a shell, basically. They set out their operating agreement and then did whatever they needed to do to get that in place, and then approached other landowners to join under their terms
right.
or not join and face these consequences.
Right.
At the same time, the Office of Enforcement continues to issue letters requiring investigative orders, requiring investigation or join the stewardship group.
To non-members.
Yeah.
So I have a small follow-up question, if I may.
Yeah.
Sure.
Is it in the authority of the regional board that the executive officer can sign a enforcement action representing the board without the board having a public?
Yes.
Yeah.
And can you explain what that is?
It's part of the delegation that you've given the executive officer in the past.
So it's the discretion of the executive officer whether she or he wants to bring any particular to the board? Any enforcement settlement?
No. So the board's delegation is more specific. They've delegated items up to 300,000, I believe, can be signed by the executive officer. Settlements can be signed by the executive officer.
Is this fall in that under $300,000 range?
Well, there's no actual penalty, so yes.
So yes, I see. Okay, thank you.
And if I, you know, in the sake of transparency, we received a copy. Our executive officer, who then promptly contacted me, we received this copy literally at the very last minute. Oh, you know, we're ready to go with this, so sign. So what we actually did is Mr. Robertson and myself requested to have a conference call with Office of Enforcement, and we requested to have our legal counsel representation to be a participant, Ms. Lori Alcon, because we felt we needed to have legal representation in how we were gonna be, you know, being able to at least address our concerns to Office of Enforcement. So I know it sounds like an odd situation when you have one side of a house with its legal counsel and then the other side of a house. So we had a conference call, and the purpose was to try to give ourselves a little more leverage to have some, you know, last minute negotiation, which really limited ourselves to, you know, I'll characterize it as tweaking a few things, because, as you use the word, the train left the station. So that was kind of our last-ditch effort, so to speak, to move forward with this.
I don't recall. Was it on our closed session agenda at one point?
No.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
May I ask a clarifying
sure.
question? I'm not clear on what Bruce was asking as far as does the EO have authority to take enforcement action. What?
To sign, to settle.
So in this case, John Robertson signed the agreement versus bringing it in front of the board for their approval. And the reason he did that was because he had the delegated authority to do so.
And I was used to settlements being on closed session and then being reported and approved in open session.
So I want to clarify just for your question, Mr. Delgado. The vast majority of settlements are signed by me because they fall under the $300,000 cap that Ms. Yar referenced. So that's the norm. I contemplate when I sign them, if they're high value or high political consideration, I'll oftentimes notify the chair. Jessica is also aware generally of these too. She often reviews them before I sign them. But it's commonplace for me to sign settlements because they typically fall, I'd say, in the $50,000 range or something like that. So I just want to, you know, truth in advertising there, let you know that that's the common approach.
So the first time the board heard about this was, I guess, on an open session agenda where it was kind of after the fact,
right,
to an information item.
Right.
That's
right.
What I was confusing, I think, with the closed session. Thanks.
So my last question, you know, it's with you, Jessica, and kind of your insight with this. I'm beginning to think that there's certainly nothing wrong with entering into an agreement such as we have in front of us, a stewardship agreement. Totally fine. It probably looked to the Office of Enforcement that it was going to get the goal that it wanted in terms of replacement water or what have you. I'm beginning to think that maybe the remedy here is within the LLC itself and the membership and what they can and can't do within the agreement that they have in front of them. And you know, how far does the Office of Enforcement go, and then starting to peel back layers to see what the LLC agreement says for itself. Any thoughts about that?
I agree with you, and I think that might very well be true. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, we will do our best to facilitate discussions with OE, and the landowners working with the LLC, I think, kind of using that two-pronged approach, maybe they're the highest chance of success.
Mm-hmm. But and we have an additional tool, which is the performance base of this contract, where there are specific milestones that have to be achieved for these a second year to be added to the contract. That's qualitative. It's pretty clear, and that's one area where we do have authority whether or not to renew this contract for a second year based on the performance of water deliveries, correct?
Primarily, it's just a metric. If they hit the metric, if they hit the target, 35 systems, then they've satisfied
correct.
That requirement. There's also
right.
another requirement that is the plan that has to ultimately be approved by the Office of Enforcement and the Central Coast Water Board. That would again be me
correct.
Approving that, not the board. I think it's a pretty unrealistic expectation to try to push transparency requirements, change transparency requirements with regards to the stewardship group's accounting into that work plan. If you follow what I'm saying there, and I agree with the way Mr. Young characterized it, that it's ultimately the conversation is between members and the LLC as to revealing how and why, and ultimately changing the financing structure or the transparency rules.
I'm just streaming thought about this. So playing devil's advocate with this, and maybe another side is you have government involved in pushing a settlement agreement. It has a metric in mind. And in furtherance of that goal, it's going to require this, you know, formation of a third-party entity to carry it out. How far does government's responsibility go in ensuring that, you know, that third party is operating a certain way? Does it just look at the metric, or does it want to make sure there is transparency and some fairness involved
right.
in carrying out the government's goal? So that's kind of another flip side of this that I'd like to know about.
Right, yeah,
And adding that it's a mandatory element, that there are only two choices.
Well, that's the coercion kind
right.
of argument,
yeah.
I think, that Ms. Silkwood
right.
raised, that, you know,
right.
it's a binary choice.
Right.
Sort of. You know, one is potentially much, much more expensive than the other. That's why I characterize it as sort of. Doing the investigation is potentially much, much more expensive than just becoming a member.
For whose? For both sides?
For the property owner.
Yeah.
For the landowners that receive the investigative orders.
Correct.
But it's also more expensive for the state water board or the regional water board to have to investigate versus a given member
right.
joining.
Right. Administering that solution is more expensive from our side too, correct?
Okay, so, you know, I think this was a healthy discussion that we had. Certainly want to thank the our speakers for bringing this to our attention. But I think now we do have some action steps here of direct follow-up with Office of Enforcement. And what I propose we do is, in subsequent board meetings at closed sessions, is to provide our board members an update on whatever dribble or slivers of information we have.
We can't do it during closed session because it's not an appropriate item, but
then
we can
do
it during
open session.
In the next
totally
EO report.
Fine with that. Absolutely. Because then, you know, it meets the overall goal of transparency. I'm totally 100% agreement with that. I was only suggesting closed session if we had limitations of, you know, what we can do in a public setting or not. So that, at our next meeting, let's plan on having this as a specific agenda item, or rather perhaps then, well, you could do it as an EO report, whichever way, as long as it is set, and that way member of the public who want to come can comment on this particular item.
Right, so I'm going to contemplate maybe a standalone item, because that's more time certain. Ms. Silkwood won't have to guess, is that going to happen on Thursday or Friday? You know,
correct.
It becomes more transparent in that respect.
Okay, perfect. So thank you. So at this time, no further question. All right, I think we're moving forward. We have a game plan. Let's move on to the next item, please.